Chicago's home for sports.
Stream ESPN 1000 easily on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
You're listening to Under the Hood on ESPN 1000.
What's up and welcome in. You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood right here on ESPN 1000 and the brand new ESPN Chicago app. Along with Chris Black, Jonathan Hood with you. Glad that you're with us. Phone lines are open for you. 312-332-ESPN. 332-3776 is our phone number. Follow us on Instagram as well at cbleck at IGJHood. You know, Chris, when I take a look at the Bulls, it's one thing to have the hashtag fire GarPax. I think it's the most overrated hashtag in Chicago sports because you know that there's not going to be any movement. There's no movement with the hashtag fire GarPax. But the one thing we can look at for sure as far as movement is the players. The players that are on this roster, that's what it comes down to, whether or not these players will be able to grow or not. And so I want to ask you about some of these players that the Bulls have because, as I said at the start of the season, these players have to be able to play around this boob in Jim Boylan. They've got to be able to just come together, have their own team meeting and go, no matter what this guy is saying, we got to do what we have to do as players.
You're right, because I think what we see, especially watching last night and the disappointing output from the offense last night for the Chicago Bulls, is there is talent on this team, but many times what it seems as if is these players are not developing, one, and then two, it seems like their talent is not being utilized on the offensive end of the floor. So I think when we start, overall, we know that Zach LaVine is a good offensive player. But then when you look at the rest of the guys who are around him on offense, it seems like there's a lot to be desired for many of them, including Lauri Markkanen, who is someone that we thought would kind of take the jump, get to the next level this season. And it seems as if, I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, I would not sell his talent yet. I would still look at Lauri Markkanen as a player that is very serviceable for a team, and whether or not he's used in the right situation, you can get more out of that player. I think what we've kind of seen from Lauri Markkanen is he's been told to be a spot-up shooter, basically, and that's not necessarily what he should be. He should be a guy that's mixing it up in the pick and roll, and he is the guy that is popping off of the screen, finding his shot, and if he has a big coming out to try and block his shot, he's able to go around them, dribble to the rim, and get his own. So I think when we start this whole conversation, Markkanen, by far, his lack of development is definitely something that's disappointing from the season from the Chicago Bulls, but I feel like a lot of that goes to the head coach and the way he's used.
Well, I look at it from this standpoint. In 46 games, Markkanen has scored 20 points or more 10 times. In 10 games, Zion Williamson has scored 20 points or more 8 times after missing his first 44 games with a knee injury. That gives you context of the MASH unit that is the Chicago Bulls, but Markkanen is a part of that in a big way. Another player as well that we should talk about here we saw in the first half and now in the second half is Coby White. So just like a lot of young players, there's going to be some inconsistencies, but we talk about Markkanen maybe not being out of position, but not utilized properly. The same thing with Coby White. Listen, if you are at a place where you're trying to teach a young player, Coby White's got to be good at everything. It's not just, okay, break glass, he's coming off the bench, here we go, he's going to shoot the basketball a lot. We know that he's not a one. We know that he's more of a two, a small two than anything else, but there's sometimes we see an explosion from Coby White, and then the next night he's not giving you anything. And so that's part of the issue, but at the same time, you have to be able to tutor and coach this kid and saying, okay, you got to be able to pass the ball a lot more. Just because you're open, just because that the ball's passed to you doesn't mean you have to continue to shoot all the time.
You and I were at the Advocate Center for the draft in June. And that night when the Bulls drafted Coby White, I was a big fan. And we talked about the fact that we think that he will be able to score on the next level in the NBA. And a part of that is his movements with the ball. He can create his own space, and it seemed as if in college he knew where his spots were to work. He could get his own baskets. Now, I would also throw Coby White into the mix where it seems like the head coach doesn't necessarily use the player the way he kind of should. Like, the fact that Coby White still can't start on this team, this terrible team, is a joke. Because I think when you're looking at the development of a player, we want to see Coby out there when it matters the most, and we want to see him out there against top-line talent and to see if he can kind of figure it out. I always wonder with Coby White if Zach LaVine kind of prohibits him from growing into the player that he needs to be, because Zach LaVine utilizes so much of the possessions because he is such a good offensive player and he needs the ball in his hands. What is Zach LaVine off the ball? He's not a good offensive player off the ball. He has to have it in his hands. And I think Coby White is much the same. And Jonathan, I still have my notes back from the draft on Coby White. And one of the things that we had is he's a speed demon who has no fear when he has the ball in his hands and scoring the basketball. He's at his best in the open floor and should benefit from the NBA spacing.
Sure.
Now, I don't think the Bulls are a good spacing offense.
No.
So I think that's a problem as well. What you'll notice, and especially with last night's game, many times on offense, you'll see the initial pick and roll, whoever that may be, Coby White or Zach LaVine as the guard with the basketball. What will happen then if you watch off of the ball on the rest of the court, you have three other players who stand in their spot.
Right.
They don't move. They don't go side from side. They're not moving from the baseline up towards half court. They're not doing anything in the offensive front court.
What tells you? Here's what it tells you. First of all, it's my turn offense.
Yep.
And secondly, if I'm not involved in the play, then I'm not going to be around
right.
to help you.
And it's like this whole concept of not moving offensively, you saw it many times last night against the Hornets and something we've seen all season. So Coby White, it seems at times he's reckless. He turns the ball over way too much. But also it seems like the spacing doesn't help him get to his spots. And he's not able to kind of work within a framework of what the head coach is trying to do, because it seems as if there's nothing really going on offensively for this team. So I am not done with Coby White. Like, I think there's still potential there, and I would love to see a different head coach who gave him specific things to work on and specific items to do within a game to kind of get the most out of a player like Coby White. So, like, again, marketing, Coby White, I think there's still potential there.
Along with Chris Black, Jonathan Hood with you on Under the Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app, another young player in Chad Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Here's a guy here that just can't stay healthy. I saw him at the beginning of the G League season with me doing the Windy City Bulls games on the radio. And so I saw him in Oshkosh against the Milwaukee Bucks affiliate, the Wisconsin Herd, right? And I thought, okay, now this is a nice role player. You know, he's got size, can roll to the basket, give you easy buckets. Here's a guy here that can do some things. And then you come to see that Hutchinson has missed 27 of this season's 55 games due to various injuries. Over the past 14 games, Hutchinson has shown some signs, 10 points a game, 4.6 rebounds. But even as Hutchinson said, I saw the quote earlier today. It's like, you know, it's always start and stop. I start the season, and then I have a major injury. Then I get going again. I get hurt again. So if he can stay healthy, you might have something there. But at the same time, here's a guy here, when you're missing so much action, it's hard for you to get traction.
Yeah, he's shooting 45% from the field, 31% from three, and 59% from the free throw line. So obviously he needs to be a better three-point shooter and free throw shooter to earn bigger minutes on the NBA level. But I agree that some of the stuff that we've seen from him when he's healthy, he shows flashes. But a part of the NBA is you have to be available, right? So staying out there, being healthy, and then actually contributing to a team, I think is a big deal, because when he's been healthy, he has been able to give the Bulls some good minutes. Now, the thing that I would be worried when you look at the 31% from three is that he's not going to give you spacing
right.
offensively. So he's more of a slasher and a cutter to the basket. But again, that's exactly the type of scorer that Zach LaVine is. So is this a guy that's going to lead your second unit, give you the points off the bench, slash the basket, get to the free throw line? And you're like, okay, he gets to the free throw line, but he's only shooting 59% from the free throw line. Okay, as a defensive player, that's a win to me. Right. So he has to improve his game. He's got to get stronger and he's got to be available, because if he's not that, it seems like this is now going to be another draft pick that in recent history, the Bulls front office has botched. Right. Like, the Bulls front office gets a lot of credit for their drafting over the years. Jimmy Butler, Luol Deng, Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson. There are names that they have drafted who are great professional players.
Nice pieces, for sure.
Nice pieces, mm-hmm. right? And especially playing above what they were actually drafted at. The problem with that is, in recent history, the Denzel Valentine, the Chandler Hutchinson, you know, Lauri Markkanen, Coby White, you have players who are basically, at this moment, duds on the NBA level. And you're like, hey, Black, what are you talking about, duds? Guys, neither Markkanen or Coby White were invited to the Rising Stars game last Friday night at the United Center.
Right.
That's a problem.
Especially Coby White.
That's a problem, yeah. right? And you say, okay, he's young. Yeah, but it's the league. And dudes pop from the moment they step on the court. You know, I watched Ja Morant last night, and I know the Kings beat the Grizzlies, mm-hmm. but Ja Morant is someone who pops.
Right.
Like if you're a scorer in this league, if you're a point guard, usually it happens pretty quickly. And I think it's not something where hopefully someday Denzel Valentine figures it out. The answer is, yeah, he's probably not going to figure it out.
Well, this is why the Chicago Bulls of 2020 was the 205th thing talked about this past weekend.
Yeah.
The actual Chicago Bulls. Everything else was talked about, but not the Bulls. Now, it's one thing about the young players. What about the veterans? I remember us doing our NBA podcast together the first day of the NBA free agency, and we found out that the Bulls were getting Thomas Satoransky and getting another veteran on this roster and Thad Young.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, well, Satoransky could play three different positions, and Thad Young is kind of that veteran, that's kind of wily veteran that could be in there to provide size. Thomas Satoransky is actually retarding the progress of Coby White, who we just talked about. Thomas Satoransky is a guy, to me, that came over from Washington, and he provides a veteran presence, but too passive offensively to really be able to get traction. Like, I like Satoransky on another team as a bench guy, but if you're going to give him max minutes, he's got to do more than what he has. But he's somewhat good defensively, but on the offensive end, not so much.
Thomas Satoransky is the classic example of just because you get more minutes does not mean you actually produce more.
Yeah.
And I think people make the mistake when they watch the NBA and they say, this guy in this situation, if we give him a starting role, we're going to get this out of him. And that's not always the case. Satoransky last year, when Bradley Beal and John Wall both got injured, his minutes jumped. And he was playing almost 27 minutes a night, if not 30 minutes a night, for the Washington Wizards last year. The problem was his points per game only went up by one, and his rebounds per game only went up by one. And nothing really changed on his stat line. He's getting more minutes. He was almost getting seven more minutes per game than what he was getting previously as just a bench player for the Wizards.
Mm-hmm.
But now as a starter, and his numbers are not popping. I thought, you know, Satoransky, to me, I was concerned about that in the summer. I was not expecting Thaddeus Young to give the Bulls almost zero this season. I thought in the summer, I thought he was going to be a great signing.
Yes, you know, it was just a solid signing, yes.
But the Bulls have been so bad this year that people around the league don't talk about how disappointing of a signing Thaddeus Young with the Bulls
right.
actually is.
And here's the thing. You and I see this, but yet you do nothing at free agency.
Yeah, right.
These are just solid guys. These are the guys we chose. So you're not going to improve the roster. You just keep it the way it is because you're just going to keep the boat on the keep it churning. And to me, you just got to be able to do more than that. So we want to talk to you about the Bulls, and this is going to be layered in this conversation. Sean, open the phone lines 312-332-ESPN 332-3776 is our phone number. Can you identify for Chris and I the Bulls' core? What is the Bulls' core? Because it's one thing to look at Gar and Pax, and we'll get into that as well on what the changes could be made. But can you identify right now what the Bulls' core is? If you don't call us, that means that you don't know, which is a major problem. So we'll get your thoughts on that and also some of the other players on this team. Also, is a new GM in place for the Bulls real change for Chicago? We'll take your calls coming up. Hood and Black on Under the Hood right here on ESPN 1000.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
How you doing?
Follow us on the gram at IGJHood and at ESPN underscore Chicago.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000. Along with Chris Black, Jonathan Hood with you. Glad that you're with us here on this Friday night as we talk to you about the Bulls. Listen, I know, fire Gar Pax. We know your hashtag. We get that. It's useless because you know Gar and Pax are not going anywhere. They're going to be in the organization whether you like it or not. Now it's about trying to get a fresh set of eyes on the organization. That's what it really comes down to. Someone else beside those two to be able to talk about this Bulls team.
You asked a question before we went to break. What is the core of the Chicago Bulls team going forward? So when the fresh eyes get here, how will they assess this roster, and what will they do to change it into a winning team going forward?
Well, the first thing you do is look at the medical.
Yeah, well,
that's number one. No, before you look at the assets, look at internally on the bones and the structure. You see these shows on A&E all the time, right? They take a look at it and says, "Oh, it's got good bones."
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
Then of course that couple comes in and says, "Well, we only have an $890,000 budget." So, you know, so if it's a $910,000 house, I don't know if we could do that.
It's the Maren Morris song, Bones. Good Bones. That's what the song's about.
Right.
Sorry, I've been listening to some country recently. But you're right. HGTV, when they come together and they try and sell a place based on the Good Bones, what do you do first? You tear out everything from the inside, right? You leave the bones, and then you revamp it from there. So when you ask what is the core of this team, I would give you Zach LaVine, Lowry Markkanen, Wendell Carter Jr., Kobe White. I would give you four players off this roster that's the core of this team.
You tell me that, and I'll tell you that's not good enough.
Well, of course it's not good enough. And I would even put, I put next to Zach LaVine's name, I would write big trade chip. Because I think a new pair of eyes here would look at Zach LaVine and look at the track record of his career where the teams that he's on never win anywhere.
Yeah.
Right? And they would say, you know, the points look nice, 25 points per game. We like what he does from three this year, improving his three ball shot to what? He's shooting 38% from three. That's great. But is that the type of guy we want to build our team around? Or would we rather utilize his asset and move him along to try and get something back to build for the future along with the good bones that you already have?
Let's take your phone calls here. 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is our phone number. We want you to identify the core for this Bulls team. And is that core good enough for you to be one of the top teams in the East at some point? Because as I said before, Chris, I think that because Kyrie is out for the season, which should have happened anyway, because there's no reason to come back. This is going to be a wash of a season anyway, that the Bulls somehow could sneak into the playoffs because Brooklyn will step down. Orlando will probably be in the playoffs. And unless there's some team I don't know of, it won't be Charlotte, but it might be another team that gets hot. I don't see how the Bulls don't make the playoffs based on this core, as many injuries that they've had.
You and I talked about it before the season. The way this team was set up this season, we assumed with some decent coaching, we thought they could take the next step. I thought they could be a playoff team. I'm disappointed in the way that things have gone this season. You didn't agree with me, but I think you would agree that they should be better than what they are right now.
Yes, in the bottom of the East, yes. They should be better than this. Because there's no KD and Kyrie, this should be a seventh seed. Again, if you're blessed with good health, but the Bulls have been so hurt, and the ineptitude on top of that, too, now. When you've only beat one quality team all season in the Clippers, it says all you need to know about the team. Let's go to the phone lines and talk to you. We say hello to Lake Zurich. Here is Brett on ESPN 1000 Under the Hood. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Jay Hood, Chris Black, what's up? How are we doing? Chris, real quick, I'm supposed to tell you hello from my wife. She's a Libertyville alum.
What year?
Same year as you. You guys ran cross country together.
Oh, yes. All right, Brett, what's up?
I think you guys are talking about the core. I agree with your core that you just brought up. I think that a big part of the issue with identifying the core as a whole is kind of like with Lowry, with what you talked about with Kobe, is we don't have a coach that can utilize these guys. I mean, Lowry's coming out of Arizona. The big thing with him was his versatility. I remember listening to Cap back before Lowry got drafted and before the draft was even coming up, and Cap said he was talking to one of his top NBA scouts, and they said that if you have the number one pick, who are you drafting? And this guy said Lowry Markkanen as the number one overall pick, because of everything that he can do. And I was laughing, not knowing enough about him. And then watching some more of his film and seeing with him, okay, he's got some versatility. And then we get a coach that can't do anything. But I think the only guy I would add to that, and this is going to sound funny, but just from the minimum that I've seen from him, I think you can include Daniel Gafford as a core guy. Maybe he's not a core, but because he'd be coming off the bench as a backup big. I know Jim Boylan seems to hate him and wants to play Luke Kornet over him for whatever reason. I guess because he's like Robert Horry, so that makes a lot of sense, right?
Right. Because the three-point shots that he hits, apparently.
Yeah, and let's play Ryan Arcidiacono instead of playing Kobe White, too, because that seems to make a lot of sense as well. But I think the biggest issue when you're talking about a core, there's not a single guy on here in the core that you have talked about that would be an alpha. Like Zach LaVine, I like Zach LaVine as a player, but he's not going to be your alpha on a championship, even a contending type team.
Well, here's one thing I know about this, Brett, and I appreciate your phone call. Here's one thing. Zach LaVine on a good team would be a guy that would be the third or fourth option that would be trying to knock down shots or be dynamic to the basket. Like some playoff team.
Let's do this exercise. And Brett, tell your wife hello. I'm guessing it's probably Stephanie, who I ran cross country with.
Oh, I remember her.
So if it's Stephanie, tell her hello. If not, hello to whoever it is. All right, let's do the exercise. Philadelphia 76ers. What option would Zach LaVine be on that team?
Is
Tobias Harris
Simmons
ahead of him?
Yeah.
Okay, so at best, he's the fourth option?
Sure.
But then you have Richardson, you have Al Horford there as well. Okay,
Which Al Horford are you talking about? Like, you're talking about Celtics or Hawks Al Horford, or this pile of whatever you're getting him from the 76ers? Well,
he might turn it on when the playoffs roll around.
I'll give you that point. Maybe he's waiting for April.
He kind of did last year with the Celtics, didn't he?
Yeah.
When the Celtics got to the playoffs, he was a different dude. All right, Utah Jazz. Where would you put Zach LaVine on the Jazz? He's not number one.
No.
He's not number two, right?
No.
Would Joe Ingles go ahead of him on that team?
Yes, he would. Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. Absolutely. And Gobert, which even though he's not an offensive threat, you would still say he's more of a go-to guy than that, right?
Yeah, but LaVine would get starters minutes on Utah, if he's not starting. Will you not?
Yeah, that's fair. He would fill, you know what he would fill? He would be the Lou Williams.
Yeah.
He would be the Jamal Crawford of that team, a guy off the bench who gives you the 25 minutes and 24 points, a point per minute type of guy off the bench in the second unit, right?
But here's the thing about the difference between him and like Jamal. I can't take that hot and cold three. You've got to be able to be more consistent with that. And clearly, if you're watching All-Star Saturday, you know what Zach LaVine is. He's not a three-point shot. I mean, it was brutal, and that's what we thought it was going to be.
Are you saying there was some pouting going on when you didn't advance?
It was some pouting around the fans that I was sitting among. It's just like, he should be an All-Star. Yeah. Look at him on All-Star Saturday. How about that?
Okay, to answer that, that person who said that on Sunday night when it got to the fourth quarter, did he belong on the court?
No, he
didn't.
Not even in the building.
No.
He was in the wrong event. He would have won the slam dunk competition for sure.
Yeah. That's fine. That's fine. He should have given the people what they want.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The larger conversation is, if he's your third best player, you got a chance.
Yeah.
If he's your best player, there's a lot of work to do. So, like, the way I would look at it is if you and I were taking over this team, because I think it's easy to say that they have to fix everything, they have to go hire new people, but if you don't offer solutions, what are we really doing? I think whoever comes in here is going to look at Zach LaVine and say, can I put two guys around him to kind of cover up the flaws in his game to then make sure that we get the most out of Zach LaVine, where he's an elite scorer, but also we're playing winning basketball? Because I think right now those two things are not going together. I think he is an elite scorer, but I don't know if the Bulls are always playing winning basketball, and I think that's why he gets the ball so much at the end of games, but yet the Bulls find a way so many times to lose games in the final 5 minutes.
The positive for LaVine is that he is one of only three Bulls who has appeared in all 55 games. He's averaging career highs in scoring, rebounding, and block shots. And once again, it goes to the old theory of even on a bad team, someone's got to make shots.
Yeah.
And that's Zach LaVine.
Of course.
Sacramento, Bulls, whatever. And again, he's just the face of this, but actually it's a much bigger issue. Like, you appreciate Zach LaVine and his production, because imagine if you didn't have it. Now what are you? Right?
Oh, well, you're the Knicks.
Yeah, or even worse.
Yeah,
even worse. 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is our phone number. Brendan in Bronzeville with Jonathan and Chris here on Under the Hood. Hello, Brendan.
Hi, how you doing?
What's going on, B?
What's going on? I pretty much agree for the most part with what you said about the core. Only whoever said Wendell Carter, Lauri Markkanen, of course Zach LaVine, and Kobe White. Only I would say Kobe White out. I never believed in him, even when we drafted him, to be honest. I like him. I know he's only a rookie, but I only see a spark plug off the bench when I see him. As far as those are the definite three I would have in the quarter. But I also really like Chandler Hutchinson. I know a lot of people might not, but a few games before the All-Star break, I feel like he started to pop a little bit. He started to sort of show himself. Well, you know, I don't know if that was just me or not.
Well, here's the thing about, you mentioned Wendell Carter Jr. Okay, so I think that he has not been able to be utilized properly. Let me put it this way. When you are a talented player coming out of college, and I'm not saying that Wendell Carter Jr. is Zion Williamson, but when you do have a talented player, Chris, and you have one in place, and you say, okay, you know what this guy's got? This guy's got a three. He can be able to knock down some shots, especially at the top of the key. So he can shoot the basketball. He is an elite rebounder. He can give you easy baskets underneath the basket. Okay, so why put him out of position? So his usage rate is down to 16.3. That's his usage rate. Last year, it was 19.2. Now, on top of that, of his lack of shooting and offensive involvement, is defensively out of position fouling. That's one thing for Wendell Carter Jr. The other thing is, too, is that to me, he's not in the real position to flourish with this team. I just think that sometimes you have a young player, Coby White, Wendell Carter Jr. Well, we gotta make sure we're working on them, make sure that they're right, because, you know, they're young players in the league. Okay, there's one thing to teach. It's one thing to overcoach. This ain't college, okay? And so maybe Jim Boylan doesn't know the difference between the two, but the natural characteristics of Wendell Carter Jr. should be on display and not putting him out of position to, you know, away from the things that he's good at.
The main theme to all of this is it seems like the young players are not being put into a position to succeed. And I wonder, and I really question, if you put a different head coach in here, whether or not a lot of this will change. Because I think what we could probably look at is the college highlights to these guys, the White, the Carter, the Markkanen, and they made different moves. They did different things in college than they're doing here on the professional level, and I get that the talent has a different they're going against different talent, but when you really consider what they do, you're right. Jonathan, you're right 100% of the time. Is Wendell Carter really being put into position to succeed for this Bulls team?
312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is the telephone number. Chris and I want to find out from you, how do you identify the Bulls' core? Is that core the team that's going to be able to bring things together for this Bulls team? I mean, it's one thing to identify it. Now, can they be healthy enough to be able to move the Bulls forward? We'll talk more about the Bulls in the NBA with Andre Snellings from ESPN. We'll get his thoughts and get your phone calls in here next on UTA.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
This is Under the Hood.
Under the Hood podcasts are available now on the all-new ESPN Chicago app. Available on your device now.
This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
With Chris Black, Jonathan Hood with you right here on ESPN 1000 on Under the Hood. So glad you're with us. We're talking about the Bulls and what we can expect now and for the future. So we will turn now to Andre Snellings from ESPN, their senior writer who covers the NBA and analytics with us here on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Dre, it's Jonathan Hood and Chris Black. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I want to get your thoughts about the story that came across this week regarding the Bulls wanting to make change. What was your initial reaction to the story? Because there's a good possibility that the Bulls will look to have a new GM and maybe a new voice in the front office.
Yeah, I think that when you have a season like the Bulls have had, you know, they had a bunch of young players that they had hopes would develop this season, and it hasn't turned out that way, especially with injury and just player development. So I think it's not surprising that they might want to look in a different direction, and it may be needed. You know, the teams at the top of the NBA tend to be those teams that are a little bit more innovative in their approach, at least a lot of times. So this could be a chance for them to try to kind of step into the new generation of the NBA from a leadership perspective.
Andre, Jonathan and I earlier were talking about Zach LaVine and his game, averaging 25 points per game this season and a career high from the three-point line, averaging 38%. But the conversation we're having about him is, even though he's improving, we're not sold that he's a number one or a number two on a good team in the NBA. What do you think of Zach LaVine's game?
Yeah, I think we've actually talked about that before when I've been on, and I would argue that number two is kind of his upside. I would not see him as a number one option on a really good team, even though he's shown he can average 25 points a game, because the game is more than that. His impact isn't on that level. Perhaps as a number two, if the number one is good enough, you know, maybe if he were playing kind of like the Chris Middleton role off of a Giannis or, you know, something like that, that's something that he could hope to develop into. Otherwise, it seems like he might be more on that Klay Thompson, try to be a really good third option that can score a bucket when needed type trajectory.
Andre Snellings with Jonathan Hood and Chris Bleck on Under the Hood right here on ESPN 1000. We always talk about young players, and the reason why, Dre, we do is because we're trying to get ready for what's next, right? It's one thing to dwell on with veterans, but now it's like, so what's up with Morant? What's up with Zion Williamson? And the same thing we're asking here about Coby White. So I see inconsistency, but you've seen the numbers. Like, where is he amongst some of the guards that you've seen?
Yeah, he's very inconsistent. From the time I watched him several times in Vegas in the summer league up to today, he's very inconsistent. There are times when he looks like, you know what, this guy could be something. You know, there are times when his shot is working usually, where it really looks like he could be at least a contributor on a good team. Then there's other times when he just looks like a rookie that's out there gutting. So I think this early in his career, for such a young player, he still could go either way. I don't think you could put a ceiling on his upside. Players have come in and played like him and turned out to be stars. Like, he's, you know, just rough numbers. He's averaging 11 points a game. And I was doing a Zion Williamson, John Morant comparison earlier today. And a lot of the really great point guards of this generation came in and were averaging on the order of 10, 11 points a game as rookies. And then they were able to really step it up from there. So I wouldn't give up on him, but he definitely has not had the biggest impact that you could have hoped he could have as a rookie.
Since you mentioned his name, Zion Williamson's only played 10 games so far this season in the NBA. Are you surprised at how good he's looked in his first 10 NBA games?
I actually am not. The only question I've ever had with Zion is his health. If he's healthy, I think that what we're seeing is a precursor of what's to come. I wrote a projection article back in May, you know, after the lottery, but before I even got to see him play in Vegas. And I looked at other great kind of man-child players through history, specifically Charles Barkley and Blake Griffin, and compared their college numbers to their first year in the NBA. And I used that to estimate what Zion would average. And what I came up with is almost spot on with what he's averaging right now. So I think that this is who he is, and he still has the upside to get a lot better.
So Chris, I don't know if you know this. Like, Dre's really big in fantasy basketball too, right? So you're love this. So Dre was asked from ESPN.com from the desk, if you were to trade or acquire Zion today, mm-hmm. name a player you'd consider to be a fair swap in terms of overall value. And Dre said that for the rest of the season, he'd value Zion similarly to players like Pascal Siakam and DeAndre Ayton. How about that? That's strong, man.
Yeah. Now, to be clear, I wasn't saying you need to get both of them. I was saying that deal is where I put Zion. Because, you know, especially in the ESPN scoring system, it really favors high-efficiency big men. And so guys like DeAndre Ayton are a lot more valuable in points-based ESPN fantasy, maybe even than he's been in real life so far. And, of course, Pascal Siakam is another breakout player. He's breaking out for the second year, and he's like MVP caliber in real life. I think Zion fits right in that range.
The Milwaukee Bucks are 47-8. The question for you is, it's not what are they doing that's so special, because we know Giannis is having one of the all-time great single seasons by any player in league history. But what do the Bucks do away from Giannis that make that team so difficult to beat on a nightly basis?
Yeah, the Bucks have a very unique approach. We talked about front office and taking different paths to victory in today's NBA. And the Bucks did something that a couple years ago I suggest they do, which was effectively move Giannis to a center-type position on both offense and defense. But where they did it really creatively, they actually left him at the four and just brought in centers that could shoot. And so when you look at without Giannis, they still have three-point shooters at pretty much every position. Chris Middleton, I think, has proven that he's a legitimate all-star. Eric Bledsoe is maybe a step below that. And then in the roles you ask him to play, the Lopez brothers, specifically Brooke, are able to really contribute in a positive way. So, yeah, when Giannis is out there, they're nigh unbeatable. But even when he's not out there, they're still able to play at a pretty high level. based on their personnel and their strategy.
Dre, lastly, and as always, we appreciate your time. We saw from Woj today that the Lakers are waiving DeMarcus Cousins and looking at Markieff Morris. So what does this say for DeMarcus Cousins? He's got to get healthy, but what do you think his next step is?
Yeah, I mean, Cousins, I think you nailed it. He has to get healthy. As far as this season, he was started, at least there were starting to be rumblings that he thought he might be able to be back by the playoffs. And this move today suggests that either the Lakers don't agree with that, or they don't want to go through the process of working a player of his skill set up to speed right in the playoffs. I would think that if another team does sign him, it might be a team that's looking to try to develop and re-sign him this offseason. And, you know, I think that's what he has to hope for. He's not the franchise player that he was until he can prove that he's healthy. So, you know, that's first and foremost on his list.
Did you pour one out for DeMarcus? I know you've got Kavassi at the crib. So did you pour one out for him?
Kavassi, yay. I mean, you know, I feel like he's really been in some interesting circumstances. I've been feeling really bad that he keeps getting hurt. But, I mean, he's been on the Warriors. He's been on the Lakers. He's still getting to be part of some fun stuff. So, you know, hopefully he's able to catch on and do some good things in the future.
Dre, as always, we appreciate it. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
All right. Thanks for having me.
It's Andre Snellings from ESPN. It does NBA analytics with us here on Under the Hood.
Something that I've mentioned to you on podcasts that we've recorded throughout the NBA season, something to keep an eye on. Giannis Antetokounmpo right now has a PER, player efficiency rating, of 32.34. That is, right now, if the season ended today, the highest PER ever for a single season in NBA history. So right now, Giannis and the Bucks, not only are they the best team in the league, but Giannis is at a level playing by himself that he is better than Wilt Chamberlain in 63, Chamberlain in 62, Jordan in 88, LeBron in 09. Those are the names that Giannis is playing above right now in the middle of the NBA season. So it's fun to watch.
It's good information. Well, there goes our 850 segment.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Hi, everybody. On ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Sorry.
It's Under the Hood. Follow us on the gram at IGJ Hood and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Well, you knew this was going to happen, Chris Black, that there was going to be an extra set of playoff games for the wild card, a 17th game in the regular season. I will tell you this, and I know it's wildly unpopular, but I'm going to say it anyway because this is the way I roll. I understand how hypocritical the NFL is. You have a commissioner, Roger Goodell, that's so concerned about CTE and player safety and all this, but yet you're going to put them in more car crashes. Now, if you are a fantasy football player, if you're a gambler, if you just love the NFL, then you love the idea that there's going to be more football. But keep in mind that when the NFL talks about player safety and caring about the players, keep in mind that they don't care about that as much as they care about the bottom line. More wild card football, more regular season football, that means it puts more coin in the owners' pockets, and the players, they'll get a little bit, they'll get their pinch, but it's all about trying to have more TV revenue, more eyes on the product, and the idea that Roger Goodell cares about that is clearly a misnomer based on this 17th game that we're going to see.
Yeah, and it's something that it seems like even if we are against it, it doesn't really matter, because it's always going to get to a point where if you can offer more to your television partners as far as programming goes, the leagues are going to do that. You know, last week we saw the NBA All-Star Game here in Chicago, and the way the fourth quarter went and the way those players gave a damn at the end of the game and actually turned an All-Star Game, which most people would always say is a complete tune-out because what's the point of watching guys just run up and down the floor if they're not actually competing, turning it into an event that you have to watch and a good event because the players are giving their all, only told me as an NBA fan that the in-season tournament we've heard rumors about to incentivize teams to try harder in the dog days of the NBA season, that's going to be a reality. Now, I may not like it. I like the 82-game schedule and then the playoffs, but guess what? Adam Silver is going to present to the TV partners a in-season tournament to create what he created in the fourth quarter of the All-Star game. Players at their best, giving their all, trying to win something. Yeah, and so when you look at the NBA, you look at Major League Baseball, you look at the NFL and adding a 17th game, adding two teams to the playoffs, is it necessary? I don't think so. I think the NFL playoffs are perfect. But I understand for the TV partners, it will now add two games to the television package for the next negotiating session when it comes to that. And that's what the NFL will always do because they can make more money
that's
on
fine,
it.
Fine, but just don't tell me about CTE. Okay, no,
and that's fair. Well, that's fair.
Don't give me the commercials and the sad, you know, video packages about CTE and how you're trying to take care of players because you don't care about that. You care about the money, and that's fine, by the way. If you're a capitalist and you care about money, then that's fine because if you're Roger Goodell, who's well-paid as a commissioner, who is on the side of the owners, he wants to be able to have that. More television, more of an opportunity for people to see the product, the better. I think that the playoff format is fine, but just keep in mind that it's all about that money. And here's the other thing, too. If they take away a preseason game, and if a team is doing what they need to do in the regular season, say they have already clinched it up after the 15th game, those two games are irrelevant just like the preseason games anyway. It's really the same thing. They make it seem like, hey, we know you don't like the preseason, but here, we're going to give you this 17th week of football. We're going to give you one more week. Keep in mind that if you're doing what you're supposed to do as a playoff team, that week is irrelevant, just like a preseason game would be irrelevant as well.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And it's, you know, 17-game schedule, and I understand that at some point they're going to try and implement a double bye. Right, so you kind of space out these games even more.
Yeah, because the bye works. He's looking at you, Baltimore.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Not when we get to the playoffs, but like, I think the other thing when we look at issues like this, and you say more football is better for everyone, you add a team, you get the additional game. I always take a step back and I try and think of it from all angles and try and figure out if there will be a consequence that comes from this that we're not expecting. Thus, like, will the number one seeds now more likely get to the Super Bowl? And is that necessarily a good thing? You know what I'm saying? Like, I think when you first say it, oh, we will have three games, wild card Saturday and Sunday, you have more football. That's great. But if it's an easier path for the number one seed to get to the Super Bowl, is that really making a difference? Is that really a good thing if we know heading into the NFL playoffs who's going to get to the Super Bowl? I don't think that that's necessarily a good thing. The other thing I would kind of look at that is when you look at the dilution of the teams getting into the playoffs, that team that once was 8-8 and you have no hope to get in because you're not in the hunt, that team usually has poor quarterback play, and that's why they're 8-8.
Yeah.
Teams that are 7-9 are usually teams that are 7-9 because they have bad quarterback play. Those teams now are going to be qualifying for the playoffs. And I get it. Stop yourself. Before you're the LA Rams guy telling me that, oh, the Rams last year were 9-7. They deserve to get in. Guess what? Their quarterback play led them not to win their division.
Yes.
And that's why they didn't make the playoffs. So I think a part of it, adding more football may be good to some, but I don't know if I need to see more teams get into the playoffs than when they're there, they're not performing well because they have bad quarterback play.
Listen, here's what we know. As you're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood and Chris Bleck right here on ESPN 1000. Here's what we do know. I think we all know this as sports fans. Football is king, no matter what kind of football it is.
Yeah.
The NFL, and look at the XFL. The numbers are good for the XFL, and there's a lot of players that you don't know or you heard of when they were in college. When Matt McGloin is the guy that resonates the most off of my television, I'm like, wow, they really dug deep to try to put a roster together. So keep in mind that even with the XFL in this winter/spring league, people are watching. People are interested in football. So I'm not going to fight that fight because football still reigns no matter what it is. As long as it's on TV on the weekend and you can gamble on it, you will definitely watch it. I'm just saying that when we talk about the hypocrisy of the National Football League and what they supposedly stand for, and yet you're going to put your players in harm's way for another week, look, the players are going to get paid. And I'm looking at a lot of the CBA proposal from the National Football League Players Association. There's some good things here. As long as they're taken care of, they'll put their bodies at risk. Because keep in mind, the players know the risk. So they're going to play that extra week. They don't mind being out there as long as they're being compensated for it. But it's just, to me, the whole idea of the NFL is so protective of their players. Well, they're protective of their bottom line. As we go to Hoffman Estates, Mike is on ESPN 1000 Under the Hood. Hello, Mike.
What's up, Hood? So I'm sorry for blowing up your guys' radio station today because I called earlier to talk to Carmen and Yurko.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you called. Carm's here. You want to talk to Carm? You want to talk to Carm? Carm's here. Do you want to talk to him or not?
I talk to all you guys. I talk to Cap. I talk to Carm, Waddle. I love all you guys. So
I guess he doesn't want to talk to me. DeAndre Ayton's pretty good. I don't understand.
You're on late, though. You're on late, though. Right?
Yeah. And paid, pal. Late and paid. How about that?
I just started working, so I was able to call all day, but now I got to call after 5, all right? And I'm on a curfew. Okay, so what I called earlier is when I talked to whoever I was talking to, because you guys always switch with who's, well, I know, but.
You were talking to me, pal. Okay, whatever you say.
I was talking to professional analysts in Chicago,
okay,
all right. Or radio broadcasters, whatever you guys like, whatever, right, we're good, okay?
I don't know, Yurk. I mean, I'm just a guy that likes wine. I don't know, understand. I mean, a guy calls me, doesn't know the show he's calling. I mean, it's radio. How do you not understand? I don't understand, Chris. How does he not know it's me?
Hey, Carm, your car just got broken into.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Get ready to call AAA. Find out what's going on. Yeah. Call my insurance company. Everything's going to be good. All right. Coming up, more sports talk right here. Carmen and Yurko, ESPN 1000, I guess.
This is Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
You don't understand.